Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Hi, everybody. It's Teresa.
Hi, guys. It's America. Hope everybody is having a fabulous week so far.
Today, we're going to talk about no one believes me. We get this comment. No one believes me that I'm struggling with mental illness or what my problems are. Maybe people have difficulty with their diagnosis or aren't even sure themselves about what's totally going on. So we'll dive right in what that feels like when, you know, you're not believed, what you can do about that experience.
I wonder too, when you start thinking about when people don't believe you, is it related to maybe the way that you're expressing yourself? And I hate what I just said because it makes it sound like it's my fault that they're not believing me. But sometimes the words that we use to describe whatever it is that we're feeling, sometimes we can't articulate it. So it may sound, I feel like crap, right? If I feel like crap and I tell you I feel like crap all the time, it's very different than me coming to you and saying, I think I may be dealing with bipolar or XYZ. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's the problem because nobody knows enough about themselves at the very beginning. They're like, oh, excuse me. Hi, my name is Teresa and I have depression and anxiety and bipolar disorder. Like, nobody goes to speak to their parent or their friend or doctor and says that. So I think maybe there's a part of it where you don't know. So you're just like using words like something's not right with my head, like something's not right with my brain.
Yeah.
I don't feel right. Like even with depression, anxiety, and bipolar disorder, you're like, just something is not, almost all mental illnesses, we hear people like something is not right.
Yeah.
I think we as a community are trying to learn better about how to hear those words when people say them and like really tune in. Like, hey, someone is trying to tell me something important right now.
That's key.
Yeah. But it sucks because most of the world isn't like that. They're not like cued into, hey, something's not right. And that means like, hey, I'm checking in with you. And this is my way of sending up red flags that, you know, I'm struggling.
Yeah, completely.
I think there's a shame element too. It's like when you're struggling for the first time, it's scary. So I think there's a tendency to want to downplay your problems or not even say them. Like, shoot, I didn't even say anything. I just was falling apart and acting out. Like I never used words, you know, I was definitely afraid that people were just going to dismiss my problem. And maybe that was all cyclical. Like part of the problem is that your parents might dismiss your problems at the beginning. They don't think of it as depression. They're like, oh, you need to, my mom definitely said you need to pray more.
But that's what I was trying to get at. Like you've articulated my thought better, but it's this idea that because we struggle with how to express ourselves as adults, right? As adults, we don't know how to say the things we feel. And I think back to when I was like 12, 13, 14, you know, that age. And I'm just like, under no circumstance, because I have gone to my mom and be like, I'm really sad.
Yeah.
Not possible, right? So it's kind of what you're saying. Like, if I would have gone to her, she would have been like, you have nothing to be sad about. You have everything you need.
Yeah.
And then if after so long, I'm kind of continuously telling her, I still feel sad. And it's like, okay, yeah, you feel sad. You're a teenager.
Yeah.
It's like normal.
A teenager should be sad.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. It's something that has to also do in the way that we communicate, but also on how the people are receptive to what we're saying.
And parents, I get it. Like, parents, they don't want to jump to the worst case scenario. Yeah. I think they're afraid that they're reinforcing it. So if you say, oh, I'm sad, then they go like, oh, are you depressed? Do you need to see a therapist? Like, they're not going to do that, you know?
Well, depending on your household.
But for a lot of people, right, it kind of sucks to talk to your parents. Your parents aren't like your normal go-to trusted person, which is why we talk so much about how parents should help build relationships with your kids so that they, when bad things happen, they'll go to you. But also as kids, I think part of it is like, if something is to be done about it, the responsibility is on us to be able to find the words that an adult will listen to.
It's learning how to speak the language that's needed for you to go and get help or figure out next steps.
Yeah. Finding the words so that it makes an adult listen, because you're using a word that is like a red flag word. At least in this side, let's assume that you're a young person who's struggling with mental health problems and you're trying to tell somebody that something is wrong
that you can't explain and that you need adults to listen and believe you and not dismiss you. What does a person need to do that better?
I wonder if you kind of just said it though, in the way that you described it. And like, let's say if I had to sit like my parent down and be like, I don't have the right words right now to tell you exactly what I'm feeling, but I know something isn't right. And I need you to believe me that something is not right. And I don't know what to do.
I think even saying like, oh, I want to sit down with you is it's almost like that's how, when you think about how you might break up with somebody, although I think a lot of kids probably break up on text now, like you're like, hey, yeah, we need to talk. And that's like a universal language for, this is a serious conversation. Like, mom, can I talk with you in private in my room or something, you know, and that cues your parent. Like, this is important. If you say like, I have thought about this, this is important to me, I need you to pay attention, that helps. If you have the words and you think like fairly clearly, I have depression or I'm hearing voices, like saying I think I have depression or I hear voices, I think helps. And then let's just, again, we kind of do this a lot where we're like, let's just assume that your parents aren't going to respond the way that you want. So you can prepare yourself that they're not going to respond the way you want. And what's your comeback? I knew that you've already talked about this and I'm telling you this is serious now. So, you know, I think you have to come up, you have to almost prepare yourself for like the next statement.
I wonder if that would be, well, you've told me this before, but I don't think that it's really as serious as you think. And that's the I don't believe you part, right? Like, it's normal to feel sad. And I think that it's important for the person that's struggling and having somebody believe them is to understand that whoever you're talking to, I don't ever think they don't have ill intentions. They just don't know what to say. They're kind of frightened by what you're saying because it puts some responsibility on them and then they don't know what to do. And they're just trying to figure it out as much as you are. And honesty is, I think, where we have to land when we say, I really don't know what to do. And you may not know what to do, but can you help me?
Hopefully after you've clarified for, I mean, I think that when young people are telling their parents for the first time and their parents dismiss or don't believe them, our problem is that we feel so hurt that like, it's hard for us not to shut down and be like, well, screw it. Like, you didn't believe me when I tried to make an attempt to tell you. So I'm basically going to shut down and never say anything ever again.
Oh, that's me every day. You know, it's like, you're not listening. Forget it. I'm not saying it again.
Yeah. Bye, Felicia. And that's so hard because we basically set ourselves back like 10 years where we're just eating our own sorrows and struggling alone again until we're like in our 20s. And this is like a very typical pattern that happens for people who try to say something for the first time about their mental health problems.
I think though, too, that's something that you learn. It's a skill to be able to talk about your feelings. You know, for me, when I speak about how I feel, most often the first emotion that comes to the forefront is anger. So if somebody doesn't believe me, I'd be like, well, forget you, yo, I ain't got to tell you nothing. Forget it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's stopping your mind at that moment and be like, yo, shut up for a minute.
Yeah.
You got to recognize that this person is not trying to hurt you, you know, but that's just our nature to try to protect ourselves.
Yeah. It's a defense mechanism. It makes sense because it starts with like fear and then fear building up and then the reaction you get and then anger and then you saving yourself just by protecting yourself. And and that process is pretty damaging. And I love that you're saying like, look, we got to pay attention to the other people. Cause I think there's some like when you're struggling and like in a really bad spot, you're not thinking about how other people are.
No.
And those people on those sides, they're lost and confused. And also sometimes depending on how we talk to people about our problems for the first time, they're caught off guard.
Oh yeah.
I know I have the worst timing when I'm telling somebody something big. And I almost do that on purpose. I think for a long time in my head and like work myself up to saying something. And then for whatever reason, I don't know if it's on purpose, but for whatever reason, by the time I get enough bravery you know, to like say the thing I've been wanting to say. It's always at the worst time. Like somebody's distracted. I didn't do the thing where I was like, can we talk?
Yeah.
You know, because then we're like, oh, hey, and then I know I have to share the thing and I know they're paying attention. I always say it when, you know, running out the door to go to work, which sucks. And I'm just like, it's like, ugh. After failing so many times at like figuring out how to have that important conversation.
But I wonder if you do that because you know that you're giving yourself space so that the person can't fully digest what you're telling them.
Because it's painful?
For whatever reason, like if you're asking me to sit in front of you and look, we need to have a conversation. Normally, I would be paying attention to what you're saying.
Yeah.
But if I'm like getting ready to walk out the door and I'm planning whatever, and all of a sudden you're like, yo, I've been feeling this, I'd be like, what? Okay. Yo, okay. And it's like secondary. It's not primary.
Yeah.
So I think that's also a defense mechanism.
It could be a self-sabotaging thing. I mean, there's two sides of the coin for knowing when no one believes you. Because we're talking about a communication thing, right? It's like either it's me and how I'm communicating, which is what you're saying, or it's the other person and they're not listening.
Yeah.
This beginning, we're talking about like the ways that I basically sabotage the problems, which contributes to no one believing me, which is yes. Sometimes it's so painful, you know, I'm definitely, there have been times where I put myself in situations where the conversation goes as bad as I expected because I'm also sabotaging because I want it to go badly. Like I don't, maybe I'm not ready to face my problems or I don't want to deal with what the person is going to say, even though I know I need their help.
Yeah. That's why I was thinking like, it's not just about the other person not believing you. Now, we can shift that completely because there are instances where people are just like, whatever you're feeling, it's not valid. You know, for whatever reason, they just believe it's not what you think it is.
Yeah. Let's talk about situations where that's true. Like I can think of a few. For example, I've talked to people who are like, I know something is wrong, but I've gone to so many doctors to try explain to them what's happening. And none of the doctors believe me that either the psychosis that I feel is not psychosis. It's something related to my physical health or like it's complicated. This is not normal, but no doctor will give me the time to help me figure out what the heck is going on. I hear that a lot.
Yeah, I think that is a very common situation, especially depending on the type of doctor that you are going to. See.
Yeah. Yes.
Because in many situations, the doctor is just kind of trying to check a box. Oh, you need some medication. I'll give you some medication. Boom. Oh, you have a fever. I'll treat your fever. But they're not really like diving into the other things that are happening. So they may kind of push whatever you're experiencing off.
Let's break that down a little bit because I think it's important. If somebody is seeing their primary care physician, primary care physicians don't have enough experience to deal with really complicated issues. So they themselves might be kind of worried or scared or tentative to like dive into a serious mental health problem. Like if you're like, oh, I'm suicidal, they would be like, okay, like, are you safe? They might not really know how to deal with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then what happens though, if you're seeing specialists, because that's a little different. So one of the things I always find is interesting is that we tell people all the time, doctors see what they specialize in. It's unfortunate. It's a bias, right? So if you see a doctor who's a cancer specialist, they're going to see cancer. If you see a psychiatrist, they're going to see mental illness. If you see an autoimmune specialist, they're going to see autoimmune diseases. But that makes it hard because you're like, I have ADHD, I have psychosis, I have bipolar disorder, I have PTSD, I have complex trauma, and now I also have all these other physical health problems. You know, it sucks that it's kind of on us as patients to like figure out what's going on with our bodies and make sure that we're like telling the right person because basically we know that we'll just get the diagnosis that that doctor specializes in.
There's this other aspect too, like if you go to the doctor's office, and this has happened with me when I go to the doctor's and it's like, I have low back pain. Well, you may have to try to lose weight. Yeah, I've tried that. You've tried eating better. I've tried that, you know? So it's kind of like you have to help them check their box, and their list of boxes that they have to be like, I've done everything that others have told me. Mm-hmm. I am now at the place that I'm telling you nothing is working.
Yeah.
And sometimes, I would say more often than not, people are afraid of taking ownership and saying, it is your job to treat me. I'm not supposed to come and give you all this information. But unfortunately, that's how our systems work. Unless you have a fabulous team around you. Okay. Because,
yeah,
you know, that could be the case. But in most cases, you have to educate the people that are providing services to you about what it is that you need.
Yeah.
And you can't be afraid to ask. It sucks. Things. Yeah. It takes a lot of like courage to do that.
And it's true for mental health teams too. Like if you're in a mental health team and you're telling your team you think something is physically wrong with you, I definitely have seen some mental health teams where like, no, that's not, you don't have, you're not having a heart attack, you're having a panic attack.
Yeah.
But if you see an EMT specialist or you call 911 and you're like, you know, I
have shortness of breath, you know, I have chest pains. They're like, call 911.
Yeah. What do people do? I think it's, you know what, we're going to tell people like, yes, the reality of it is that it sucks. That the reality is that the responsibility is on us to try and find the bravery, to find the right words and to print crap out so that people have records and people have evidence, something else tangible. And then I think it also helps after time to also, for me, I have to think about what I need or want. You're going to do both things. Like when you're distressed, you're just gonna be like, oh my God, I'm totally screwed up. Like, bah! You know, you don't have solutions. Like you don't know what you need. But after going through that process a couple times, I think that's like where we've come to learn that like, okay, when I'm well, I have to write down the things that I need so that when I'm screwed up, like, I'm going to go and I'm not only going to be like, look, listen to me, look at my face right now. Something is wrong. Yeah. I'm going to be like, this is what I need. I need to go get reconnected to my doctor. When I go get reconnected to my doctor, I need to be like, look, something is wrong. I need to change my medications. Or look at my face. Something is wrong. I need you to reevaluate me for something.
Yeah.
And that way, when you speak that clearly and have a specific demand, I feel like people can't ignore you, you know, as much.
I think you are completely right. And a key thing that you said is the idea of writing things down, because we get so involved with the crap that's going on in our head that once you walk in to a doctor's office, you're just like, oh, okay. Yeah. And it's just a relationship. This is an ingrained way of thinking, you know, the doctor knows what's the best thing for me. And it's like, no, not always. So when you're walking out the door, you're like, damn, I was supposed to ask him this, you know?
Yeah.
So it does take some prep to get you to this place.
Yeah.
Another thing though, too, is like when you start thinking about other situations where people may not believe you, I chalk it up to like the relationship that you may have with somebody, whether that's like your friend or your boyfriend, your girlfriend, you know, your significant other. And it's like, oh, she's just moody. You know, it's like, nah, man, this is not just moodiness. This is not me about to like have my period. This is something else, you know? And in some part, I think it has to do with the fact that the person may not know better. They just don't know. But it also is about you expressing yourself in a way that they can capture what you really want them to say. And it goes back to, I think putting things on paper really helps. For me, writing stuff out really helps.
It is so much of what, like, when no one believes me and that experience is more
isolating.
It's devastating, you know? Yeah, because we are in a period where we're distressed and we're trying to reach out to people, which is what everybody tells us to do. And then people either don't believe us and then, yes, we're not like explaining things the right way. And honestly, I think a big part of when someone doesn't believe you is you got to step back and like not let yourself fall into that despair of that conversation going horribly wrong.
It's like this cycle. We want things to go a certain way, but when we don't, then we hear the stupid things that we say to ourselves. And it's oh, you didn't say it the right way. Oh, they have no idea what they're talking about, you know? And I hate that we're talking about this idea of you being the one that is helping educate the other person.
Yeah.
But in many ways, it has to be that way because of the way that subjects around mental health and everything are just misunderstood. We've been taught to think about it in a certain way. So it's kind of like you have to break down whatever they've learned, seen, whatever, and then be like, now I need you to pay attention because this is for real. My story. I'm telling you my experience.
Yeah.
Whatever you've heard doesn't mean nothing. Listen to what I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh gosh, you know, you're even bringing something up, which is like what happens sometimes when you tell someone your story and they're so consumed with their own life that then they tell you about their problems.
Which is normal.
So like somebody didn't even just believe you. They were just like, oh, but your problems weren't
as bad.
You're not dealing with that because let me tell you how it is. Like, let me tell you how bad it is.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think that's why there's such a delay. Like, the first time you do this, it's devastating. And we shut down. And you have to make choice to, like, take care of yourself. And you're right, not to beat ourselves up. Because that's part of the problem is that, like, when you're in that negative space, it is hard to do what we're saying. It's hard to be, like, the bigger person. It's hard to, like, put aside the stupid thoughts that you have that are about where, like, the mental illness voice versus, like, look, like, how do I think about this in a way just so that I can survive and, like, do what I need to do and take that next step and not set myself back, you know? Because you're going to have all the thoughts all at once, and they're all overwhelming.
There's another component, too, and it, like, is under all these things. It's this idea of making yourself vulnerable, right? Because you are exposing pieces of yourself when you say, I need help.
Yeah.
When you do that, and, you know, I speak from my experience, anytime I do that, and I'll tell you, there are very few people in this world that have seen me vulnerable. It's because I know that those people can handle it, one. So that's putting some trust in that person. And two, you know, trusting the relationship that we have with one another enough to be like, this is me with nothing trying to hide whatever I'm feeling.
Yeah.
So it is about courage and bravery and planning, not planning like step one, step two, just thinking through the different ways it could go.
Yeah.
And knowing that you'll still be okay after.
So no one believes you. If you're listening and you're thinking this, you have to go back. You have to go, what happened in that situation? Why didn't somebody believe me? What is going on in their world? What did I do that the way that I conveyed it? What was going on in my heart? Like having compassion for myself if I was scared, realizing that it's normal to feel scared. So maybe I just didn't say it the right way. And then you're going to go take two. You're like, you got to go take two. How am I going to do this again? Do not give up. Try again. And then I think if you have a situation where it's like with a doctor or a parent, like I will say one big thing that helps is to find an ally. Mm-hmm. So the first time something wasn't going right, I actually reached out to a different family member who could be with me because I also felt more strength in numbers. Yeah. Like this is my support person. I'm coming to have this hard conversation with this other person, with this other family member. Yeah. And that helped so much because then when I didn't have the voice to speak for myself, that person spoke for me.
Yeah.
And then when things didn't go right, I also like was able to leave with them and they were able to support and comfort me in a way that I couldn't do when I was by myself. Right. And I think the same thing happens in a doctor's office. Like if I came with my husband or if I came with my sister or something like that, then, you know, just the doctor can't turn away two people, you know?
And that's very true. You need allies and you need bridges.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to find people that can help you fill those roles if you haven't found them yet.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when we don't have the capacity emotionally to handle this, having somebody next to you that's going to go and fight for you.
And with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's a very good point, Teresa.
All right. Well, I think there were good nuggets here. Hopefully that helped. If you are feeling alone and you feel like no one believes you, know that we believe you.
We totally believe you.
It's a personal experience. You know, it's like your stories are real stories. getting people to understand that does take time. So that's why we have to keep fighting and hopefully in the open.
Yeah. Thank you guys for listening.
Have a great day. Bye, y'all.
See ya.